Hello, and welcome to the Music Teacher Coffee Talk podcast. I'm Carrie.
And I'm Tanya. We are both elementary music teachers who love to talk shop, preferably over a steaming cup of coffee. This is episode 155. Today, we are checking in with how we've implemented some ideas from the book Realizing Diversity, an Equity Framework for Music Education by Dr. Karen Howard. We'll also talk about our highs and lows from the teaching week, discuss some ideas in our Know Better, Do Better segment, share a Work Smarter, Not Harder teacher tip.
And in our CODA section, we'll give some specific recommendations of our favorite things we are enjoying in and out of the music room. So grab your beverage of choice and let's get started. So now we're going to talk about some highs and lows in the classroom. Tanya, how are you feeling? High or low?
Such is life. I could go either way, but I'm going to focus on, I had a third grade performance very recently this past week, and it was based on a book, Acoustic Rooster and His Barnyard Band, that I am forgetting who the author is. Anyway, I have to give props to Paul Maley, one of my former Kodai Level 1 and CKI Kodai graduates, because he was the one that brought my attention to this book and how it can be made into a performance. And so we took that book, and it's really wonderful because it's got all of these references to jazz musicians. It's all barnyard animals or animals that you would find maybe at the zoo as well. So there's Ella Fitzgerald, Mules Davis, Pork Chop, the percussion pig. And so we took this book and we did some jazz standards, but also some things on the instruments. I even did a spoken piece about Pork Chop, the percussion pig, that I created. And we also played recorder at the very beginning and the very end. It was a lot of fun and it was really well received. And the kids did a wonderful job. And I'm really glad that we were able to pull in all these different elements. But I just keep, it just keeps reminding me of how kids need time with material, especially when it's like different stylistically. So getting kids to swing, you know, and feel a swung rhythm and to get into that groove, it takes some time. It needs to like kind of gestate in them. So we sang, it don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. And I just had a karaoke track with that, but it was a wonderful time. And the third graders, they seemed to really dig it. I did not go overboard with any of those things that I'm not a fan of, like, we didn't worry about costumes. I did not have kids playing parts. I did show parts of the book displayed on a screen, overhead projector. That's correct. Anyway, and that projector was thanks to you. Yeah. Thanks to you, Carrie, because I was like, it can't be done because the screen will cover the kids' heads. And then you were like, I did that because I just put it partially. So I brought down the screen partially and I got my husband to be the, driver of the slides, yeah, which was another good idea. Also my husband, who's an art teacher, he also adjusted all of my wonky, slides and made it fit just so, because that's his expertise. All in all, it was really fun. I keep thinking, like, should I have done more with having the kids dress in certain barnyard animal? And for a time, I also thought maybe I should, like, you know, when there's these little jazz references in the book, when they say, oh, Acoustic Rooster was feeling kind of blue, which is all about the Miles Davis album, like, should I play a snippet? And then I thought, that's fun for me and nobody else is going to get all those little things,
few parents maybe, but yeah.
So when we talk about Thelonious Monkey, can I play like a jazzy melody on the piano straight from Thelonious Monk? And I thought, Tanya, who cares except for you? And I don't know.
But thanks
Well,
to note, because you will likely do this program again in a few years, right? I know
maybe.
I
I
recycle
don't
programs. I mean, as long as it doesn't bomb, I usually do. So then you can add to, I mean, this is your first time doing that particular program, right? So
is,
you can
yes.
make some notes for your future self of next time, maybe add a few quotes or a few minor costumes or something if you feel like
Yeah,
that's worth the time. But if you're also happy with it, then fine, don't.
I will also say, and this is something that I don't know if it's a feature or a bug. My programs in the last couple of years have been super short. I'm talking like 25 minutes or less, right?
Yeah.
And every time it happens, I'm always kind of like trying to read the room and check when teachers are like, "Oh, it was so great to see the kids." And I say, "Do you think it was too short?" And so many times they say, "It was perfect. That was exactly right." No one has approached me and said, "Tanya, your programs are way too short." So I'm gonna run with that
Yeah.
because it still was so much work for that 20 minutes, you
I
know?
know. I know.
And I had speaking parts and, you know, we had an ORF bard instrument thing going on. We have all of these elements. But then the realistic part of it also is that I'm looking at all the kids on the stage and the instruments and, you know, the microphone for the speakers, and there is no way I could have like acting or a dance or like there's no room. There's no room on my stage.
Yeah.
So as we are still coming out of our COVID times and getting used to the new normal of like what do concerts and programs look like and what could I be doing and should I be doing? And I'm still like, I guess it's just because I've been taught teaching for years and years and years. There's still a critic in my head that goes, "That was really short. I don't know about that. Nobody was doing any acting. Nobody was Acoustic Rooster." But what's it about? It's about the music, right? It's about kids getting up there and having fun and having the opportunity to be in front of an audience. I had speaking parts. Kids, they got to be on stage and perform in front of an audience, and they
That's
got to
right.
do music that they loved and that I love teaching. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
So that's a high. There you
That's
go.
good. Well, that directly relates to my low.
Oh.
But it's also, you're making me feel better about my low. So my low is this. Fourth grade, I'm working on a fourth grade music program right now. And for the first time in my career ever, 20 something years, I had to push back a program date, and not for weather reasons, because of me, because I did not allow for enough rehearsal time. And I'm still blaming it on the fact that I have this schedule where I don't see the kids as often as I used to because we had to add a fourth rotation to our schedule, blah, blah, blah. But really, had I sat down and just counted how many lessons I was going to see the kids, I would have seen the reality of, oh my gosh, there's no way we're going to be ready for this program, you know, and I should have started rehearsing way sooner. So, coulda, woulda, shoulda, I realized I was at a turning point where I could either just try to plow through and do a not so great program that I felt, even simplified, still not so great program that I didn't feel good about, or, you know, mea culpa and apologize to the teachers, the classroom teachers, and the principal and everybody else involved and say, hey, we're just not ready and I'm gonna look for a new date. And I did. And I felt super guilty about it. I obviously still do because I'm talking about it right now because that doesn't feel good, right? It doesn't feel good to admit like I messed up my planning because I'm usually really meticulous in my planning, but I messed up. And I mean, I'm okay with it now. I mean, I have to be because we're moving forward. Sent the letter home to the parents telling them about the new date. And it's fine. You know, everybody knows about it and it's going to be fine. And it will still be a simple program because I'm still looking at like six rehearsals total, six music classes total. Now, some of the songs we already know. We're doing a Colorado history music program. I know, Tanya, you're working on one as well. So some of the songs we already know, we didn't have to learn a ton from scratch, and it's just kids standing up and presenting, here's something we learned in Colorado history in our class, and they're going to write these little blurbs with their classroom teacher. So all I'm doing with them is just teaching them a few new things and then polishing things they already know. So six music classes plus a combined rehearsal is really going to be fine. But all that to say, it just didn't feel good to have to change the program. It's not something I ever want to do, so next year I'm going to learn. I'm going to plan better. But just hearing you talk through how it's okay to have a shorter program, it's okay to have a simple program, because that's what this is. This one is super simple and it's really more of an informance than anything else. And I'm totally fine with that. I just have to get good with my decision and stick by my decision. And I know in the end it's going to be fine because, like you said, it's about the kids getting up and performing, getting the opportunity to perform and share what they've learned and celebrate what they've learned. But it's also teaching people in my school, because this is my second year in the school, and I still have people being like, okay, so the fourth grade musical. And I'm like, no, this is not a musical. This is, I'm calling it a music program. I know some people use the term performance, some people use concert, some people use informance, but it's definitely not a musical. I will say that much. And it's having to retrain other people as well that they're used to less performances, but big performances from the teacher before me, where I'm all about more performances, but simpler performances. And people are getting on board with this. I haven't heard any complaints about it, but it's just having to reframe the expectations. So, all that to say, that's my low. It'll be fine in the end, but I'm just saying it to the world that if you're ever in that position where you have to push back a performance, but you know it's the right thing to do, it's okay, because I've been there and it happens.
We've all been there. I mean, it's totally understandable. And yeah, I mean,
I mean,
it's
now I'm
okay.
blaming it a little bit on weather, even though that's not accurate, because we did have two snow days, but those two snow days were on days I was going to be gone anyways, because it was while we were at Oak.
Yeah, that
So
was
I
over.
can
So.
kind of sort of be like, well, the snow days, but that's really not it. I know that it's really just because of me. But yeah, like you said, we all, I mean, I haven't been there before, but obviously I'm here now and it's fine. I'm not judging other people who have been. I'm just judging myself. So
It'll be
it's
okay.
life. I know.
Yeah. And now it's time for our main theme. Way back when, last summer, you remember last summer?
I do.
Yeah, summer of 2023. For our summer book club, we read the fantastic book, Realizing Diversity and Equity Framework for Music Education by Dr. Karen Howard. And we had a lot of takeaways from that. And you can go back and listen to that. It's episodes.
We'll link to it in the show
We'll
notes.
link to it. There you go. So yeah, we had a great time reading the book and having some discussions about that. I would really like to read it again now after we've done this project. But
Exactly. Yeah.
one of the things that we set up for ourselves was that we were going to do a check-in sometime during the school year about any ideas or any projects that we might have implemented as a result from reading this book. And if you are following along at home and you have Realizing Diversity, there is some appendix or some appendi at the
Appendices.
end. Appendices. Thank you. Yeah.
Appendi.
Appendi. Yeah. For your appendectomy. Anyway, so Appendix D is all about a music culture project that Dr. Howard put together. And then at the beginning of the school year, along with some other teachers from our district, we decided that we wanted to do a music project all around the rhythm sonclave. And if you're not familiar, the sonclave rhythm, which is comes from Ghana and is very prevalent in West African music, but also South American music and jazz and even rock and pop music, goes bump, 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 bump. Bump, 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 bump. And so it was really wonderful to collaborate with other music teachers. And we all decided that we wanted to aim for fifth grade as far as who we were going to be teaching this to. And then we got together, we brainstormed what kind of things we wanted to happen. And above all, I think I needed to myself get much more educated on the history of the Sonclave rhythm, which was a huge part of it for me. And then we broke it down into lessons. And by we, I mean not me exactly. I feel like I did the most work outside of the group because I really didn't get down to brass tacks until I knew I was going to be presenting it to my students, which changes everything.
Yeah.
So we just kind of wanted to talk about that experience and what we learned from that, what went well, what we'd like to change in the future, and all of that. Anything
Yeah,
you want
so
to add
first of
to that?
all, I want to give a shout out to our planning partners from our district,
Yes.
just in case they're listening. So Zach, Kelsey, Georgia, and Chris were our planning partners. And this was just like a PLC, a professional learning community that we created. And, we didn't have to do a music culture project, but Tanya and I were saying, hey, we talked about how we wanted to create this music culture project based on this book that we've read. And they said, oh, yeah, we'd like to join you on that. And Zach, of all people of our group, I mean, was the one who contributed the most as far as background knowledge. So thank you,
Yeah,
Zach, and
he had
really
that
steered us
background
in the right
knowledge.
direction. But then we each contributed different pieces to come up with this project. And as Dr. Howard talks about, the purpose of her project was really to trace music, some sort of musical nugget through multiple cultures and time periods. And so ours was specifically about the Sonclave. And when we looked at our Colorado state standards, the standard that we focused on is to describe the use of various timbres and rhythm patterns and their uses in various historic periods and cultures. So it fit perfectly into kind of what the goal was. And when we talked about this in the summer book club back in the summer, we just both really loved this project that she laid out and how in depth it was. But then that was really the rub, was we didn't feel like we could take this exact project and implement it in our classroom because it was very lengthy and very in depth. And so we wanted something that could be done in like a 4 to 5 lesson chunk of time. And so we decided to use Dr. Howard's project as inspiration, but break it down a little bit smaller.
Yeah, I consider this a dipping our toe into
Yeah.
creating something like this, because definitely we could go so much deeper. And
Oh,
I,
yeah.
yeah,
So
resisted
I'm
doing that.
going to share my screen for those of you
Oh,
who are
for those of
following
you
along.
watching, all
Yeah.
12 of you, go
Okay,
ahead
but I
and
can't find the button for sharing screen, and I don't know why I can't find that. So if you are watching the YouTube video of this, and these are not slideshows that we are able to necessarily share with you because they were not created just by us. They were created, with a group, and so we don't necessarily feel like we have permission to share all of it. But if you're looking, you can at least get some inspiration on what we created. It's nothing that is so insanely complicated that you can't figure it out. Oh, here's the share screen button, the really big green one in the middle. See, it's been a long time since I've done the Zoom, Tanya, you know what I mean?
I totally know. Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Hey, can you see what I see? Are we
Yes, I
looking
can.
at my rhythm around the world day one?
Yes, we are.
Okay, cool. So this is a slideshow that, we had kind of a group slideshow that we created, but then I took that and put my own spin on it, and then Tanya had a slightly different version. But this is the one I use with my students. And Tanya, you can interject and talk about what you did slightly differently with your students as we go. So again, we designed this as like a 4 to 5 day lesson unit, depending on how you see your kids. I know for you, Tanya, because you see your kids in a week-long chunk, 5 days makes sense. I see my kids in 3 days at a time, and then they come back to me for another 3 days later. So this ended up being 5 days. Yeah, 5 days. So I ended up having like one extra random day afterwards that I did something different. But all that to say, I called it Rhythm Around the World, which is very, a very loose title of what we're talking about here. But I wanted to encompass with this that we are tracing a specific rhythm and how it has traveled around the world. So day one was all about Ghana. And so we started off with a listening to the Kakatsitsi drummers, who are a traditional drumming group from Ghana. And I didn't know of this group before. This is like what you talked about, Tanya, when I really started to dive into what I wanted to do with this project. This is something that I just found on YouTube, a video of this group. And in this performance, the Sonclave rhythm is very obvious and apparent on the agogo bells. Is that how, am I pronouncing that correctly? Agogo bells, the double bells, is that what you call them?
A go-go.
Yes. So you can hear that rhythm really prevalent in here. But I hadn't introduced the rhythm to the kids yet. This was just a getting our ears open and listening and talking about what sounds we were hearing, where in the world do we think these folks are from, and just some things we were noticing. And then I got into, again, with the help of other folks who made this slideshow, just some things about Ghana, just where is Ghana located, what are the languages spoken and things represented in Ghana, just some really simple things. And then it was time to get up and moving. So the folk song that we incorporated into this unit is Sansa Kroma, which is a folk song from Ghana. I showed them very simple notation of this. The source that I like to use for Sansa Kroma is from the Let Your Voice Be Heard book, which is a really fantastic source because it has it all the different parts that you can layer into it. But I just showed them some really simple basic notation for the song, just so they could kind of trace the melody with me. And then you can do a traditional stick passing game with it or a rock passing game to just get them up and moving.
And if you do want to dive a little more into folk songs from Ghana, that resource, Let Your Voice Be Heard, is really worth every penny and then some, because you hear some field recordings in there and so many different instrument parts that you could really take that active music making piece and really flesh it out with those recordings that you hear. Oh, it's just wonderful, a wonderful resource. And I say that especially since what you just showed, I know, was a simplified rhythm.
Yeah.
But know that there is so much more.
Oh, yeah.
In that resource, Let Your Voice Be Heard.
Yeah. And we'll link to that in the show notes for sure. And then I talked to them a little bit more about musically after we played this game, we came back and sat down again, about call and response and excuse me, just some of the general characteristics of music from Ghana. And then we listened to another example of drumming and singing from Ghana. This is another, can you pronounce this? Is it Kaplanlogo? Is that?
You know what? I'm going to say, I don't know. I'm so sorry. I don't know, Carrie. I would have to like.
And Karen Howard refers to this in her book as well, which is like, it's a genre. It's not like the specific song,
right.
You know, and this is where like learning as I go, you know, I told the kids, this is how I believe this word is pronounced. But unfortunately I didn't have the time and resources to bring in a culture bearer. So I was doing what I could with the resources that I had. So giving them an example of, again, another drumming and singing group, and then the sonclave rhythm is prevalent in this one as well, again, on the agogo bells. And then from there, talking about what is the sonclave rhythm. So again, if you're looking at my screen right now, what I showed them was a very simplified version of the sonclave rhythm compared to a steady beat. And the purpose of showing this to them was to talk about the word syncopation and what syncopation is that it is a rhythm that does not line up with the beat. However, when I taught them the rhythm, I just taught them to say 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2. And I talked about how that this rhythm, especially in Ghana, but in most places in the world, is not a rhythm that's necessarily written out for people to read. It's passed down orally through oral tradition. So talk to them about that a lot, that this, I'm showing you the rhythm so you can see how it lines up with the beat and how it leaves the beat. But typically this is something that would be just passed down by ear.
And this is something, this is a time where I first introduced the idea of, here is a rhythm that functions as a beat.
Exactly.
So later on, when we get to the Bo Diddley beat, as it's often called, I talk about with them how, okay, the reason people call this the Bo Diddley beat, which is just the same thing as the sonclave rhythm, is that it's something that is throughout the entire song that you feel that da pattern, and it's like it's the beat that is throughout the whole thing. It functions like a beat, but it is a rhythm because it's short and long sounds because it's duration. So I think that's really very fifth grade appropriate, as far as like thinking about the difference between beat and rhythm and all these musical concepts, is the functionality of it.
Yeah, and that term syncopation and the idea of syncopation is a standard in our Colorado fifth grade music curriculum as well. So, this is just a very simplified version of that because syncopation can mean so many things, obviously. So, giving them that visual, and so then it was a lot of I want half the class to clap the son clave rhythm and half the class to pat the beat. Now let's switch. And then we went back to, sorry, I was playing the music there for a second. We went back to listening again, and we had to figure out which instrument was playing the son clave rhythm. So now that they have the reference of what the instrument is, let's listen again to this drumming group and find the son clave rhythm, which they found right away on the agogo bells. So something that, we always talk about when we talked about world music pedagogy and all these things is, the strive to also make sure we're still doing active music making throughout all of this. So then I have three sets of agogo bells in my classroom, plus a cowbell. So I had four students who were playing the son clave rhythm on the bell instruments, and then I had a group of four or five students playing a steady beat on tubano drums, and then we swapped. And they were able to do that pretty well, and then the rest of the class was just doing it with body percussion. And then I had them layer in singing salsa croma on top of it, which is a different syncopated rhythm, and that's when things kind of fell apart a little bit, because that's pretty tricky. Right? For one day. Had we done this much longer over multiple classes, I think we could have gotten there. But I wanted them to have that experience of playing instruments and singing at the same time because that's really the root of where all this comes from, right? And then this is still day one. We finished up with listening to, again, I just did some YouTube searching of popular musicians from Ghana today, because I think it's really important for students to hear traditional music from a culture as well as modern music from a culture. So I found a recording by a musician, I believe it's pronounced Sarkodie, and he's like a hip hop rapper, singer, artist in Ghana. And we listened to the song Obi Doba, which translates to the one person. It's a love song. It's all about the one person. I did my due diligence. I made sure that the lyrics, even though we heard it, we didn't hear it in English. We heard it in the, oh my gosh, my brain is not working. What is the language? It's going to come to me in a minute. I'll get there. Akan language? Yes.
Akan.
We heard it in the the foreign language, so we didn't hear the translation. I still wanted to make sure they weren't listening to anything inappropriate, right? So I had to find the lyrics and find the translation and just make sure it was fine. Anyways, what's cool about this song is you can hear the son clave rhythm. It's in like a, electronic drum kit, but you can hear it right away. And we didn't listen to the whole song. This was just like the last 30 seconds before we lined up for the day. So this was one full 45-minute lesson. We did a lot of listening, but we also got up and did a singing game. We also got up and played instruments and did body percussion. So I really tried to find that balance between sitting and listening and getting up and moving. Did you do something pretty similar on day one of your
Yes, so
lesson?
for day one, I actually put most of these slides, no, all of these slides in a Nearpod
Oh, right.
and read each slide and put in recordings of the musical examples when it wasn't a video. Like I put in a recording of Sansa Chroma along with playing the son clave. So I had them work on that individually. Because we're at the point with the fifth graders that the more large group instruction that I do, the worse our behavior becomes, unfortunately. And so instead of trying to fight that, what my plan of action has been for these last couple of months is that we start together, we end together, but for the middle chunk of class, I'm having them do some individual stuff for accountability and so that kids can focus because I just have way too many students who are trying to throw us off. So at the end of this lesson is when we played all together and when I had some kids playing the beat and the other kids playing the son clave rhythm. But I really only just bring it in at the very end of class. And then, of course, we start the very beginning of class, all listening together, and then all playing the son clave rhythm. I just say, clap when I'm clapping. Right. And then I say, now it's time for you to go and do that Nearpod lesson. And the nice thing about Nearpod is that I also intersperse some of those slides with like a check for understanding. Like there's little quiz things. So here's a matching game where you have to match like this symbol of the bird from Ghana and what it represents, like those kind of things, because it keeps them engaged and there's some accountability that has to be there. Otherwise, I just need that for my students. Otherwise, I'm not gonna have them learning much of anything. So I really wish I could have done it whole group the whole time, but that's where we're at. And they still got what they needed. I wish we could have more large group time, but we did play, you know, at the end of class for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. I started coughing while you were talking. I tried
That's
to
all right.
make it as quickly
I understand.
as possible. Yeah. So all that to say, you know, putting together this little slide and finding all of those musical examples, even though we did some of that pre-planning with this large group, it still took some time, you know, I mean, it took time to do all that research, and still I'm flubbing pronunciations and things, and there's more than I could be doing, but just wanted to put it out there that these things do take time, but I will solidly feel like the end result was worth it. And we'll talk more about that when we're done. So
Right.
moving on to day two. So day two was focusing on music from Cuba and talking about how the sonclave then moved from Ghana or West Africa in general to the Americas. So we started off by listening to an all-female group in Havana, Cuba called Ana Cayona. And if you're familiar with the book Drum Dream Girl, which I did read to the fifth graders, I actually got my fifth graders to come and sit and let me read a picture book to them. Drum Dream Girl. It talks specifically about one of the sisters who was the one who played the drums in the band, and you know, just how groundbreaking it was in the 1930s that there was this all-female group from Cuba playing instruments, and in particular the drums. And this is an example of, you know, music from Cuba that has the sonclave rhythm. And so it was interesting because when I played it for them the first time, I have four classes of fifth graders, and I think two out of the four caught the sonclave rhythm right away. Somebody in the group was like, I hear the sonclave. So that was pretty cool without me having to draw it to their attention. So after we listened and we read the book Drum Dream Girl, we then reviewed Sansa Chroma because, again, I want to get my kids up and moving. I don't ever want to do a lesson where they're sitting the entire time, right? So we got up and we did that activity again. We reviewed the difference between the rhythm and the steady beat and the way we think of steady beat with the sonclave rhythm. And then we talked about how it has come to Cuba. So obviously this is where we need to talk about the slave trade and the realities of the slave trade and how many musics migrated from West Africa through the slave trade to the Americas. So showed them some pictures so they could see on a globe, you know, geographically how these things happened and how these things came to be. And then we listened to an example. Again, this is just a video that our co-planner Zach found on YouTube of a group of Cuban street musicians, and you can hear the sonclave rhythm being played now by the claves. So this is where we also talked about how the term clave literally means key in Spanish. So it's like the key rhythm, the key to it all. But then it also is the instrument itself, and how the instrument itself has roots in West Africa, and that is become a traditional music of Latin America. And so we got out the claves and I showed them a video of the sonclave rhythm being played on the claves. And then we took turns playing the sonclave rhythm on the claves. And I have like eight sets of claves in my room. So we got through everybody quickly, which was good.
Yeah.
And that was kind of day two. And then there is this video that I found that I shared with you too, Tanya, and it is the sonclave rhythm, the world's most popular rhythm. I can put, excuse me, this particular video in our show notes, because even if you don't show it to your students, I think it's a fascinating video to watch. It's one of these videos where there's an artist illustrating with like doodles as they're talking and explaining. It really gets into the nitty gritty of the different types of sonclave rhythms and the different ways it can be counted collected and notated and used. So for most of my classes, we really only watched like the first couple minutes of it, and then I cut it off. But it's a fascinating video, so I'll definitely link to that in
Yeah,
the show
that
notes.
was a great video to show. And yeah, you're right. When it gets into all the variations of the sonclave, my kids' eyes would glaze over a little bit.
Yeah.
So I would be like, no, let's just focus on the initial sonclave rhythm. So that's exactly right. Yeah.
Exactly. So day three now of sonclave rhythm. This day was all about now the use of the sonclave rhythm here in the States, in particular through the music of Bo Diddley. So we listened and learned about who Bo Diddley was. We watched a video of Bo Diddley performing on the Ed Sullivan Show, the song Bo Diddley, which is really like Hush Little Baby, you know, it's very
He
similar.
sings the lyrics of, yeah,
Exactly.
Papa's gonna
Call
buy
and
you a
response.
Mockingbird.
And again, I had some students notes right away. And of course, now they're starting to see the pattern. Hey, I hear the sonclave rhythm in there.
But now it's in the guitar.
Exactly.
Mostly.
And the way
Yeah.
that it's used is very call and response, right? Bo Diddley sings something and then you hear that dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, coming back in. So we started clapping the sonclave rhythm just very naturally while we were listening to it. So we talked about then the Bo Diddley beat and how it became known here in the United States as the Bo Diddley beat. And this speaks to what you were saying earlier that, yes, in our technical terminology, this is still a rhythm, but it was referred to as the Bo Diddley beat because it really functioned as a beat in so much of early rock and roll and here in the United States. And then can be heard in many ways. So this is where Tanya's genius came in. So I'm going to let you talk about your choice board that you created.
Oh, well, I mean, it's just very simple. There's so many songs with this Bo Diddley beat in there that I just made a little choice board of 9 different songs that kids could listen to. I will say that I had to throw out some that I really wanted to use because of references to guns, or I'm thinking about U2's Desire, which is a great song, but we talk about, you know, shotguns in there, which is kind of funny because the reference is that everyone can buy a shotgun, and that's not awesome. But anyway, so yeah, you really have to make sure whenever you're using any music with kids that you listen to it and see if it's appropriate, and if there's going to be anything in there that's going to be, you know, not school appropriate. So on all of these little icons, you know, I've got Black Horse in the Cherry Tree by K.T. Tunstall. I got a song by David Bowie because I have to. There's a song by Rihanna in there. Most of the kids were really attracted to that. Most of my kids, their favorite was I Want Candy and Bow Wow Wow. They did a cover of it. And I just put in the cover because I like the Bow Wow Wow cover more than the original. And they just had to listen to 4 different songs. And then they had a Google form to fill out where they talk about which one was their favorite and maybe give a little reasoning why it was their favorite one. And then something that I did in my classroom after we did the choice board is I just put the choice board up for all of us to see. And I say, oh, okay, Carla, come on over and pick one of the songs. And then I passed out my claves, my gon kogui bell, my agogo bells. And we played along with, you know, that Bo Diddley beat in there. And I also brought in some djembes. And that's when I went, oh, wait a minute. We can't hear the song anymore. A little too much. So kids who were not on an instrument ended up clapping. And so that was just kind of a fun way to bring it into, hey, these are songs maybe you've heard before, and look how this rhythm has gone from West Africa, from Ghana, all the way until it's still relevant today. There's a little clip, a video clip that I like to show them of K.T. Tunstall, who wrote Black Horse and Cherry Tree. She's a rock and roll blues musician from Australia. And she talks about using that Bo Diddley beat very intentionally. So I show them that little clip, and she has her guitar with her. And so she even sings a little bit of George Michael's Faith and mentions U2's Desire. There's a whole bunch of songs. You know, I just picked 9 that I thought were, you know, fun and appropriate that the kids would like. But you can really go down a big old rabbit hole if you're
Oh, yeah.
looking for music with that Bo Diddley beat. It's interesting because you and I both came upon this video on YouTube talking about the Bo Diddley beat that initially I was like, this would be cool. But as you go along, it's not exactly accurate in all of its, I'm like, well, that song doesn't really have the Bo Diddley beat in there. And,
Of it just
so
becomes some form of syncopation, right?
exactly. I'm like, yeah, just
Could
because
talk
you can
about.
play the Bo Diddley beat in there, which you can in a lot of songs, it's not really prevalent. You don't really hear that in the guitar or any instrument, but which is just another reminder that not everything in the internet on YouTube is of quality. So, yeah, there's also a Spotify song list that someone put together. And same thing about I would say a fourth of those songs I would not classify as this really has the Bo Diddley beat. But
Not in
anyway,
an obvious way to show.
not in an obvious way that would really be good to showcase. Here we really feel it and see it and hear it, whatever.
But you did a good job with this choice board because I mean, this was cool that you included music from various genres. So, like you said, you had a Rihanna song that's going to really appeal to kids. I Want Candy, which is very pop, that it's going to appeal to kids. But then you've got some rock songs in there too. So, I did the choice board as an individualized thing because it's a Google Slides, right, with like a menu page. So, I showed them how to navigate them and I kind of give them a little snippet of each song so they kind of knew what each one was. To kind of give them piqued their interest. And I told them in the amount of time they had, they needed to listen to at least three. They could certainly listen to more. And then there was a Google form they had to fill out at the end saying which ones did you listen to? Which one did you like the best and why? So I can see the benefit of doing it both ways. Like you mentioned, sometimes it's good to have kids with headphones doing individual listening, but the way you did it is cool because you could add instruments to it and have them
Well, I
actually
did it
playing
individually
along.
too.
Oh,
This was
yeah, okay.
after they had that chance
Got it.
to do it individually so that they came to it when we did it as a
They
group,
came
knowing
back.
that, ooh, I really want to do, Faith by George Michael. And it does not include the video by George Michael because Carrie, you told me that George Michael's little shaky behind was not appropriate. So,
I mean, I appreciated his shaky behind, but I knew that would be problematic for
yeah,
our
you're
kids.
right. You're right. I just,
No, but that was great because then they got to see how it is incorporated into all these different genres and through all this time. And yeah. So then day four, to me was the one that I thought was really the most fun because this is where they got to be creative. And I will say, unfortunately, because of time and schedule, I didn't even get to this with all. There's one class that did not get to do this day. So based on the Google form that they filled out, I decided to bring back I Want Candy for like our opening listening experience. And I played them three versions of I Want Candy. I played them the original version by the Strangeloves from 1965, and then showed them Bow Wow Wow from 1982, and then showed them a little bit of Aaron Carter from the early 2000s doing his cover of I Want
Yeah, that's
Candy,
so
but I didn't
funny
want
because
to
I
get too much
forgot.
into that because, Aaron Carter is it's a sad story with Aaron Carter. But anyways, just so they could again hear how it's been used, and immediately Sonclave, they noticed it right away and we clapped along to the Sonclave. But all of these days, every day started with that listening experience, right? It's like to pique their interest, to kind of pique their ears and get them focused in. And then we did a project on Soundtrap. So we are lucky to
Yes.
have a Soundtrap subscription in our district where all of our students have a Soundtrap account. And if you're not familiar, Soundtrap is very similar to GarageBand, where you can create electronic compositions through looping and through all these other means. But we focused on looping. And so what I did was gave them a starter track of a Sonclave rhythm and basically told them they could do whatever they want. They just can't delete the Sonclave.
And
And
we
really,
have to
the
say that
purpose.
Zach is the one who put
Oh, yeah.
this Soundtrap project together. And
Yes.
based everything off of his template. So thank you, Zach, for that.
Thank you. So really, you know, I told them the purpose of this was for them to demonstrate to me in what way would they want to incorporate the soundtrap or the Sonclave rhythm into their soundtrap. And I told them to really think about, you know, what genre do you want your song to be? Do you want it to be a rock song? Do you want it to be a pop song? Because then in soundtrap, you can filter out your loops by, you know, style or genre. And then just let them go to town. And, it, you know, with all things, I had some kids who took it really seriously, and really they had the Sonclave coming in and out at different times, and they had different sections. And I mean, this is also to the benefit of the music teacher previous before me did a lot of soundtrap with the kids, so they were already familiar with the basics of soundtrap. I didn't have to go too much into it. Anyways, it was just really fun, and I let them be creative. And then the last few minutes of class, we kind of came back together, and I let them play out loud if they wanted to, let kids share what they came up with. So that was day four for me. And then if I had a day five with any of my kids, we just did like a wrap it up day where we played more of our soundtrack projects. I had a Blook It quiz that we did where I asked them questions about things they had learned, and we played Sansa Chroma again because they really loved it. And it was just kind of like a celebration day, a wrap up day.
Yeah. Yeah. For the soundtrack project.
Is that kind of what you did too as well, Tanya?
Yes. For the soundtrack project, I wanted to mention that I did not guide them towards specific genres or anything. Maybe because, you know, I've been in that Beyonce mode of let's just make music.
Oh, well, sure.
But anyway, and I did not get to that with all of my classes. It was really only one of my three classes that we dived into the soundtrack project. And then I had some kids who came to me and they were like, well, I found another Sonclave track that I want to put in instead. And I would say, sure, let me hear it. And sure enough, they had found some really good, you know, really good representation of the Sonclave played on a different instrument. And I said, sure, fine, you can use that instead. Uh-huh. And you are welcome to delete the one that's already there. And so that was really cool that they were going and finding, you know, all of the ones that they could hear and listening to them and making those kinds of choices, and then building everything around that. Because really that was the main thing, is you're building this song around this rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Exactly. So that was very fun.
Yeah, because of course I had a kid ask me like, well, can I have the Sonclave for like one measure and then make it fade away?
And then I was like, something.
No, because the whole point is how can you creatively use this? And he was like, oh, okay. And then he ended up coming up with a fine project. He wasn't seeing the full reason of the why, but once he saw the why, he got it. So
yes.
So that was the whole thing, the whole 4 to 5 day unit that, mm-hmm. I mean, I did and ended up doing it 4 times over, and you did it 3 times over, right?
Yep.
So let's talk about some, I mean, positive things. What were some things that we were pleased to see?
Well, it was really fun and interesting to see kids' understanding of how there's this, you know, one little element that has gone through time and gone through cultures and countries, and, you know, how we can trace it. That kind of big overview was, I think, fantastic, because that's the kind of thing that I want more of in my music room, is this understanding of we're not all our own groups doing our own music, and never the twain shall mix, that, you know, things go through change through time and through cultures and all of that. So that was really fun to see. But then I did have moments where I'm like, I'm not sure if they're getting that in this amount of time. I felt like I wanted, and now I'm sorry, I'm going to the challenges already.
No, it's okay.
I wanted more time. I thought we needed more time in Ghana. We needed more time with that music,
mm-hmm.
That we were, you know, I feel just dipping our toe into before we went and brought it to the Americas. I just wanted to be further. I wish it could have lasted over longer than 5 days. And I did make mine into a 5-day project.
Yeah.
Instead of a 4-day project. What with some of the extensions. Yeah, I wanted more active music making as well. Here I go. You're saying what were the positives? And I'm
That's
just
okay. Talk about
starting
that.
to
No,
go.
go.
Yeah. Active music making, so very important. It's great that they could play the sonclave. We needed more experience doing that. And I would have wanted to layer more parts on top of that. Like it would have been great if I could have had, even like on GarageBand, kids playing, quote, playing and a guitar and just strumming through GarageBand or adding different rhythms with different instruments on there, which we did a little, a tiny bit. If you can say, okay, well, this group's playing the beat, this group's playing the sonclave rhythm. And again, with that, they need time to really digest that rhythm and be able to play it well in order for that to happen. It would have been nice to like play a song with like three or four layers and singing on
Exactly.
top of it and go for a whole experience. And I felt like I wasn't doing enough of that. And part of that was because of the classroom behavior challenges I have right now,
Yeah.
is that we can go there, but we can't go too long because I've got one or two or eight kids, honestly, that will turn it into something else because they need that attention, you know? So I was a little bummed out that we did not get to do quite as much active music making. And then I was thinking, well, could I maybe do this with a younger grade? Yeah, maybe, but I don't think I could go with the depth that we need to go to, right?
Right.
And student creativity, of course, was wonderful to see through Soundtrap. But again, more group music making, more of that community building through music would have been really wonderful. And like just more time and going deeper would have been really nice. It's challenging when you see the kids in the way that we see them. So right now I see my kids 5 days in a row and then they go away for 2 weeks. This would have been great, like 10 lessons worth if I had them 10 days in a row. Or I mean, I guess I could see five and five and breaking it up and doing like 3 days Ghana, 3 days, 4 days, with some South American music. We barely touched on jazz, right? I did show my kids a clip from In the Heights and the opening song from In the Heights. When they performed at the Macy's Day Parade, because as you noted, when they did it for the Macy's Day Thanksgiving Parade, they don't have, the a little bit shady language. There's some,
It's toned down for kids.
it's toned down for the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Yeah, I would have wanted to go deeper and had more time because I was getting really excited with all the things that I was learning. I mean, I found this great clip of Emily Estevan, who is Gloria Estefan's daughter, singing and playing percussion and just, wow, doing this fantastic performance and really banging out that sonclave rhythm when she wasn't playing her timbales really fast. And yeah, so I really would have liked to have just more time all around. I would have liked to think more about how I could make it even more developmentally appropriate for fifth grade. Was another thing that, yeah, I want it to be something that they are getting that global, whatever, understanding of how music travels and these ideas, very specific ideas, can travel, but also the community of music making. Yeah, I'm just saying the same thing over and over again.
So this is what we were saying when we were reading the book too about the time of this, that, I mean, this would be the perfect kind of thing to do if you were seeing like a middle school general music or music appreciation type class, right? Like if you're in that position where you're seeing middle schoolers, but it's not an ensemble type class, this is the perfect kind of thing that I could see developing over an entire semester of time where like each week you're doing a deep dive into one specific culture and incorporating some active music making as well as listening into it, where, we're just dealing with the reality of how often we see our kids. And, I was overall pleased. I'm fortunate to have a pretty awesome group of fifth graders this year who really were into it even more than I thought they were going to be, and we're asking some really cool questions and making some really cool observations. But of course, like you said, I felt like we could always do more and go deeper, especially with the active music making. So definitely feeling the same. And then
Yes.
of course, like you said, I started thinking about how could I do a similar project with other grades? And maybe it's something that's a sprinkling through an entire school year where we're coming back to like a theme of like in fourth grade, our theme is this particular rhythm or this particular melodic thing, or I don't know exactly
Well, I
what it
think
is,
what
but
would be beneficial is if I could sit down and look at, for each grade level, can we relate geography to what they might be doing in social studies already, right? And we could go there. And so it could be that every grade level we go a little bit deeper with a specific culture and their musics. The other thing that I know that we experienced when we were doing this in a group is I need more education myself. And I can do that because I can, get online and I can read things, I can listen to things, but I just felt like my knowledge was lacking and I need more of that. And it was really fun to do all of this research. And I still feel like I know I barely scratched the surface. And so, if I was going to really, really bring this to other grade levels, then I need more time to get entrenched in musics of other cultures and really absorb that and have a bigger understanding. And that's not even to say how I need to understand more of the histories of these other places and what created this society to value the music this way. And there's just so much more to it. I need educating. I need to learn more.
Well, and I think that also brings up the point of having culture bearers come in and work with students. So it's not just me
Exactly. Yeah.
trying to relay information that I'm trying to research online and do what I can in a short period of time, but really bringing
Right.
culture bearers in
And
as a
I was
community
always, yeah, I was very, very upfront with my kids saying,
Oh, yeah.
listen, this is not my music. I am not an expert on any of this, but let's listen. I mean, I think that when you bring those authentic performances, then that is, in a sense, bringing a culture bearer into your classroom because it's like, yeah, you can hear me play the sonclave, but let's hear this group that is in Ghana, and let's, yeah. So that's what I can do right now, but.
But having an actual, if there's a culture bearer who was in the room or you were doing a Zoom or a Google Meet with them so they could answer questions. I mean, obviously it would be great, but then that brings up the point of, one of the challenges was, again, mentioning earlier, the time that it takes to prepare this type of unit because you don't want to just do a very surface level, oh, here's a song with sonclave rhythm,
For
and
sure.
I don't know even anything about it. Like, I wanted to know a little bit about the musicians I was putting before them, the
Exactly.
translation of the song that they were hearing, and a little bit about the culture. And so even just the small amount of research, which I feel like was barely anything, still took a lot of time. So
It did.
I think we just have to be realistic with the time we have. But then the cool thing is, I mean, now that this unit is, pretty well fleshed out in a very basic way, if I bring it back in the future, then I'll do more with it and more with it and more with it. Just like my Kodai song collection, just like everything else that I've taught, is that it's not a done deal. It's gonna keep evolving. But overall, I was really pleased with how well my kids responded to it. And there's more to be learned, but I think the learning that they did was really valuable. And to me, the most exciting part was when they're leaving my classroom and they're clapping the sonclave rhythm down the hallway, because that's what a lot of them ended up doing, because it's just so darn catchy. And they're like, the sonclave rhythm. I was like, yes, that's cool. So. So now it is time for our Know Better, Do Better segment, where we talk about ways to be more culturally responsive, as we've already been discussing. But Tanya would like to share another resource with us.
Yeah. So I can't believe we haven't mentioned this before, but there is an excellent article that was part of Oak's publication, The Envoy, and it is written by Lorena Code Boyle. It's called Classroom Process, Reimagining Song Lists in the Kodai-Inspired Music Classroom. And this is just a wonderful approach to thinking about our song lists and thinking about not just, of course, throwing out problematic literature, but carefully, mindfully, and thoughtfully replacing those songs and what we replace those songs with. So, Lorena, a couple of conferences ago, she did a wonderful session on this very thing. And what I loved seeing was some specific examples of songs and how she was using them and bringing them into her classroom. And then also tying it to these four domains from Learning for Justice, and the four domains to help educators make more equitable communities and classrooms are diversity, justice, identity, and action. And so using those four domains, she talks about songs that she's brought into her classroom, how they fit curricularly, and which part of those four domains they are really highlighting in her classroom. So I'm not going to say more about it because you really need just to go read the article. I love that she gives these specific examples. And this is a wonderful, wonderful example of what we should all be doing in our classroom. And she also stresses that this is not a quick one and done, let's go through our lists and put new things in and take problematic things out, and how it's really this process of being thoughtful about bringing in new repertoire.
Yeah. And we'll link to the article in the show notes. And it is part of the Oak Envoy, which is the publication of being a member of OAKE. Yes. However, this article was a featured article and is accessible to all folks. I mean, exactly. Oak non-members alike. So we will link to it in the show notes. And definitely, it's a quick read, but a good read.
Exactly. It's our Know Better, Do Better segment, and Carrie's going to tell us some brilliant tool that's going to just make everything so much easier and seamless from here until the end of the school year. Transform our lives, please, Carrie.
Which Carrie? Not this Carrie. Must be a different Carrie. No, I mean, this is a little thing, and I mean, it's very possible that it's been mentioned before in a past podcast, especially when talking about assessments or lesson planning, because it kind of falls in both of those categories. So it's just something that I did recently, and I was like, oh, that's smart. And I do this often, but I just thought of it for this podcast. So it is this: when writing your lesson plan and you have an assessment moment happening in your classroom where you want to take data, whether it's writing it down on a piece of paper, if that's you, or putting in an iPad or whatever it is, you know, if you just need that minute to write it down and take the data, I often are in the habit of, after the assessment moment, whatever that moment is, we then transition into some sort of a singing game where the kids are completely independent and are able to do the singing game while I take the data. And I'm very intentional about planning that to give myself time. So an example of this is first graders in my classroom are working on So and Me. And so I did an improvisation activity. Each student had an individual set of tone bars, and we isolated just the So and Me tone bar, and we were using the song Starlight, Star Bright. And then I wanted to do an improvisation activity where I gave them the rhythm of ti-ti-ta, ti-ti-ta, and then they got to improvise on just the So and Me bars however they wanted to play ti-ti-ta, ti-ti-ta, and that was their star song. And we had four students improvise in a row, and then we sang the song. Four more students improvised, and then we sang the song. And so when that was all said and done, after we cleaned up the tone bars, I wanted to jot down the students who were able to improvise with the correct rhythm and, you know, just write down my data. And so then we transitioned from Starlight to Starbright into another SoMe song. I think it was maybe Rain, Rain, Go Away, which I play a game with an umbrella, but they know it well enough that they're able to play it independent of me. So then that gave me time to write down the data. So all that to say, my tip is just simply that when you know you're going to be doing an assessment that involves you recording data, plan something in your lesson where the students can do something independent of you. Hopefully it's a fun singing game, because likely whatever they were doing for the assessment was kind of a cognitive load, so now they need to relax a little bit. So whether it's a dance they know, a singing game they know, where you can quickly write down data and they're having fun, it works really well. So now it's time for our CODA section, where we talk about something we are recommending for either in or out of the classroom. Tanya, what would you like to recommend?
Well, I have mentioned this podcast before, the podcast called One Song, where we have two hosts. One's a DJ. I think they've both been DJs. Anyway, and they take one song, usually from the rock, pop, hip hop genre, and they kind of flesh it out and they talk about the specifics of the song. And, you know, it gets a little music theory, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They talk a little bit about, you know, those specifics, but I wanted to mention an episode that recently dropped from One Song where they talk about the Rihanna song Umbrella, which is just an awesome song. And this is kind of the season of rain, but not really, because it doesn't rain here much in Colorado. But you had mentioned Rain, Rain, which I also am doing with my first grade. But when I do all of these, I kind of do like a rain lesson.
Yeah.
Or usually it's like one or even two lessons where we're singing Rain, Rain, and we're playing with the umbrella, like you had mentioned, because I do that as well. But I also show them Singing in the Rain, Gene Kelly, that one scene where he's singing in the rain. Mm-hmm. And then I also show them not Rihanna Umbrella, but from the show Glee, they do a mashup of Singing in the Rain with Umbrella, which just works super well together. Yeah. Yeah. And that's just kind of fun to bring in, like, oh, and the kids go like, oh, I know that song, Umbrella, by Rihanna. Anyway, all of that to say, it was just very apropos that it dropped when it dropped. It's a fantastic episode where they get into the nitty gritty and the details. And I love how they have the song stems where they say, let's just listen to that keyboard line, right? Or yeah, just the vocal line. And it's always like a deep dive. And those shows, like ours, are usually an hour plus. So if you like the song Umbrella, it is an episode that's really worth listening to. And it's, you know, a good podcast overall.
Cool. I love that song.
I do too.
Awesome.
All right. And you, what have you been into?
Well, I just last night watched the movie Maestro.
I have not seen it yet.
I know. It was one of those things where my husband and I were home alone. He is a musician as well. My kids were off doing whatever activity they were doing, and we were on our own watching a movie. And
finally, like, alone. What should we do?
Watch
Maestro.
Watch Maestro. You know, I have mixed feelings about it, but overall, I thought it was really well done. I thought Bradley Cooper really did his homework as far as, you know, just like the conducting aspect of it and the musical aspects of it. I think the music was really well chosen for the different scenes. You know, I mean, there's going to be criticisms of everything, and I'm sure you can read both things, but it's not like a movie I would watch over and over again, but I'm glad I watched it. So I know this isn't like a rave review, but Carey Mulligan, the actress who played his wife, was really fantastic. She really was incredible. And just overall, I thought it was, you know, as a musician, it's really worth watching. And I thought it was well done. So if you haven't seen Maestro, get your tissues.
And tell me, like, from what I've heard, because I don't see things, I just listen to podcasts about the things that I should see, that it's mostly about their relationship and not so much about him as a conductor, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's where maybe the movie fell short. Like, I really did want to know more about him as a conductor and a composer.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, come on, give me more of West Side Story and how that was written, please. Like, they barely even mentioned it, I feel like.
Well,
It's
yeah.
very much about the personal lives. And I mean, if that was the purpose, then they did a good job of that. And I don't think I knew as much about Lenny as I learned as watching that movie, and his personal life and whether all of this was fact or not. I'm not positive, but I think the general gist is correct. So yes, they had a complicated relationship and a beautiful relationship as far as the movie goes. And yeah, but that is definitely the argument I would see as a musician, as I definitely wanted more of the who did he study with and how did he become who he became at a musical level. But I'm sure I can get that information somewhere else. So on an entertainment aspect, the movie was very good, and the musical scenes I thought were really well done. So worth watching for sure. We've reached the double bar line. Thank you for listening to Music Teacher Coffee Talk. Show notes can be found at musicteachercoffeetalkpodcast.com. You can connect with us on Facebook and Instagram. Just look for Music Teacher Coffee Talk.
If you enjoyed this show, please consider subscribing, rating, and leaving us a review on iTunes to help others find this podcast. And we always appreciate folks buying us a coffee, so look for that link on our show notes and on our Facebook page. Until next time, this is Tanya.
And this is Carrie wishing you happy musicking.